All right, that's our new fishing theme music. And time for a fish report.
Hey, Depp, how are you doing?
What do you think, man? We got background music. We got theme music.
Hey, I like it.
Yeah, man. It's by a guy named Ben Winship, and this is actually off an album called Fishing Music.
I can kind of envision, like the song says, the fishing reel kind of giving out some line, the drag's spinning, and the fish is jumping. And
well, when you got music that's called reels, I mean, it's kind of a setup.
Yeah.
I mean, fishing reel.
Yeah.
So anyway, we were just talking, and this is like a retraction that the newspaper would have or something.
Yeah,
you made an error last week, and no one caught it except you.
I haven't heard. I'm sure people caught it. Some of the geekier folks, I'm sure,
but
caught it.
You've been bugged ever since.
Yeah,
right?
I've been bothered by it. It's kept me up at night.
So we were talking about the Lahontans and kind of their history, which is ancient history. We're talking about, thousands of years ago. And these are fish that I always refer to them as, a prehistoric type of fish, even though they don't look like a dinosaur or anything.
But they do kind of look a little less refined.
Yeah, for people like you. I mean, before we get into the retraction part,
right?
What are the differences between a Lahontan and a more modern fish?
Well, the Lahontans, they just, as far as like a visual, their face looks more like. And I've noticed it with some of the older species of fish. It looks more like an alligator face or something. I don't know how else to describe it. Kind of flatter, more mouth to it.
Mm-hmm.
And whereas, like, later on with rainbows, you get more like just this perfect torpedo.
Yeah.
Kind of rounded out.
Very streamlined.
Not a giant mouth compared to the rest of the face.
Mm-hmm. What about scale size? Is it similar?
You know, relatively fine scale in a lot of, like, the old species, like char. And it seems like Lahontans are pretty dang fine scaled too, so maybe the scales get a bit more coarse, at least in some species. You know, I mean, of course the reason we made this mistake, I made this mistake, was I'm always thinking five things at once.
Yeah.
And there I was again thinking of a fifth thing. It makes me think of some really old looking trout, the Apache and the Gilas, and that's like we had the tree kind of start and. There was a branch that just kind of had like two offshoots, and that was about it, and it was kind of done. And then it kept going up the trunk of the tree, and it branched again, and it became rainbows and cutthroats. And now we've seen those branches branched out numerous times.
Oh, really?
The cutthroat, 11 different species. Now we have 9 existing.
Uh-huh.
The rainbows, I don't have that total count as well for you because there's even more to the rainbows. I'm sure it's more than that because you have fish from Baja Peninsula, roughly there on the mainland of Mexico, all the way up to Alaska and over to Siberia. And so they've split as many, if not more times. You've got golden trouts and red band trouts and all these different kinds.
Yeah, which happens as the populations get separated. They slowly change from their what once was just their neighbors. Mm-hmm. And which is a great segue for what we're talking about, because we're talking about when these bodies of water were connected back in olden times and then.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah, they become highly specialized into those little spots. And my big mistake was I was saying the fish came up over the Cascades, up into the Columbia area and went over the Rockies, rather, and I said the Hudson. A total brain fart there. I don't know where that even came from. Total other side of the country. Maybe I was thinking about brook trout or something.
I was thinking my map.
I saw your eyes kind of go, huh?
Well, I had this map in my head, and nowadays the Hudson's like way over there to the right, and I'm thinking, wow. Well, back in those days, maybe it...
I meant the Missouri, way away from it. So you just got to kind of imagine this big northern U-turn that goes up, and then it takes a ride over the Rockies, and it comes back down in the Missouri, and that gave them access to that Great Basin there. And then they just slowly, like you said, evolved separately. A lot of those species... started to specialize in being really, because those lakes had desiccated to such a point, it's concentrating all those, and I'm not really a water expert, but just all the minerals and everything gets super concentrated, and you get these lakes that another fish would just not even be able to survive in, at the highly alkaline, and some of the fish, like the Olvard before it went extinct, would be, you know, it was a like a 1,000-mile surface area to that basin, and then it shrunk down to a tiny desert creek that would be anywhere from about 38 degrees at night to 84 degrees in the midday. They can tolerate huge temperature swings, but still get really big because they're isolated in there with the minnows that have been in the Big Lake.
Wow.
So yeah, just really interesting. You know, the cutthroat is really one I've probably studied more. I found, you know, I think I heard a show on your, I don't know if it was Science Lab or something, where the brain can only store so much information, so there's a selective amnesia or whatever, and so you kind of got to toss some stuff out because you're really stacking this stuff up over here.
I don't think anybody who listens to us talk would ever accuse you of not being crammed full of fish knowledge. I think you're
sometimes I'm spilling it here and there. Yeah.
You're leaking. Yeah. You're leaking fish trivia, dude.
I'm trying to just specialize in the Pacific trout species. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what I've found that that's all I can hold in right now. Hey. I mean, I'm really interested in char and the fish of Mongolia, the taimen and everything, but. And I really can't get outside of the salmonids, like to go into like cichlids and warm water species. It's just no way, no way.
Well, and people need to realize that you guide on these waters right here locally. Mm-hmm. You work with the fish in these waters. I mean, this is really
they're my home fish.
It's all we expect, really.
Thank you.
Truthfully.
Thank you. Good.
You know, one of the things people really do like to hear is our fishing tales.
Oh, yeah.
That you do. And you're always busy, just in case people don't hear us or haven't heard us much. Leif's a guide on here in the Methow. And you're constantly either taking somebody out or going out and sort of, you know, reconnoitering the waters for when you do take people out. But you've had quite a few little interesting stories here lately, right?
Yeah, well, a guy that we both are friends with, our local Ski Hill general manager, just newly inducted this year at the Loop Loop, Mr. CP.
Finding himself with a little bit of time now that the ski season's over. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you know, I'd had him out once or twice, and he just hadn't, you know, it was kind of proven to be the fish of 1,000 casts. And I finally got him out again with a couple of our friends, and we were in the boats. We fished for about, you know, half the day, and he still hadn't got one. But we got into a spot where I was really hoping we were going to. And I was like, you know, if you can just get past this rock right here, it's going to drag you, you know. And it drug him and kind of just almost took it under, and he didn't overreact. He let it keep going, and right after it passed it, kind of started to float nice and smooth. Bloop, it just went under perfect. And he set the hook perfect. We got the boat over there to where we could land the fish, and it took a while, you know. I mean, it really earned its place as his first fish. A big two salt, you know, 30-something inch female wild steelhead.
Oh, nice.
And just battled for him really good. And we got her back in there, and he just, abruptly right then tackled him in the mud and smeared his face with war paint, because, you know, he's a close friend, so you're going to get that. I'm not going to do that to every client. Just, you know, don't freak you out or anything.
Don't be put off. But no, CP needed. That's a good initiation.
It was. I felt like it was a total initiation. Like, he finally got what he was trying for, and the smile on his face afterwards showed for sure.
So you mentioned a two salt fish. Now, how do you know that she's been out there twice?
Well, she's only been out there once, but she's been out there for 2 years, and that's the two salt, 2 years in the salt. Uh-huh. And so if you get one that's a two salt, more likely it's going to be anywhere from about 28 to 30 plus inches.
Okay, so you're going by size.
Yeah. You can tell right away, usually by the feel of the rod, and then once you see that fish, and then you know it's around 30 inches, you know that's a two salt fish.
Don't look at me and say you. I don't. No, you do. I don't. No, that's why when you say those things so casually, it's like,
well, we all know this, you know.
Yes, we all know.
It's common knowledge.
Maybe you and your wife and your kids know, but I don't know.
I used to think the same thing. I used to think that meant a couple times to the salt.
Uh-huh.
And I only realized after working in fisheries that just means they've been out there for a couple years and a couple years and some change, because these guys, I heard, you know, they took and, you know, took the left up there at Alaska and almost made it over to Siberia. So they got some extra time out there and extra feed, and they seem extra large this year.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, interesting. You know, there's something I was going to ask you. I mean, since you are out on the water, have you been down to the Delta? The Benson Creek Delta.
Oh, yes.
Hairs.
Yeah, you know.
And I'm curious, you know, how Mother Nature or how the fish are dealing with the sort of sudden change in the river there. Are you seeing adaptation? You know, are they going around that? Okay.
You know what's weird is that the biggest delta, that alluvial fan, is underneath, I believe it's Leecher Creek, just downstream of Benson there is the biggest one.
Okay.
And it had almost bottlenecked the river. So it's really changed the flow.
Actually, I heard
there's a huge wave there.
No, I did hear that it did. I had dinner with Janie and Bob the other day, and they said there was a few hours there, I don't know how long actually, where it was blocked.
Right. Well, and even now, like, I mean, it's not going to stay like this through the high water for sure. It couldn't, because it is squeezing that the water between the west bank and the delta tighter than it will. It's going to get washed away by the high flow, but for right now, there's just this intense couple waves because it's squeezing, and there's two large boulders, first on your left and the second on your right, that have got some huge waves on them. And that you would usually not see this size of wave anywhere on the river at this time of the year, and you can tell it's because it's kind of a temporary funneling of the river that's probably not going to hold up, but it's there right now. And as far as the first part of your question, it's really odd, but that place I was telling you that we got CP's fish and a lot of fish lately, it's right there. It's there in the muck. And
so are they holing up there and thinking about it for a while?
You know, they seem to almost be concentrated right at that area in the river where it starts getting kind of crappier and less fish upstream of there, which is odd because I would have thought the opposite, like they'd shoot up above it. But so far, you know, in the last few weeks, that stretch between Benson Creek and Carlton has been the best fishing for steelhead.
Oh, interesting.
You know, that that comes with a caveat. You know, the local trout in those areas took a big hit, like we were talking about earlier this year. And it seemed like almost more of the ones that we found washed up on the banks were the larger fish, I don't know, I guess they'd be like 5 and 6 year old cutthroat, and the whitefish. So I don't know if that just means the trout were just older, maybe a little more apt to fall over from stress or what have you. And I'm not sure with the whitefish. Right. Maybe they just really can't tolerate turbid water.
Okay. Well, that's partly why I ask. I mean, I think we were all sort of heartbroken for a lot of reasons, but for the hit that the river took, the fish took. Yeah. But on the flip side of that, I really want to believe that these things have happened.
Oh, yeah.
And there are little mechanisms built in for survival of some kind.
Yeah, those busts lead to booms.
Yeah.
You know, and we've talked about it before, too. The Chewuk, I really believe, has become a better trout stream for the 30-mile fire. We've got more nutrients in there now, and we've had just more prolific hatches of insects than we've seen to in the other streams. We have great evening hatches up there. It just really feels like a different stream, and it kind of is anyway. But I think we're gonna see, after we've got this overabundance of nutrients, this sweet spot. Before we get back to completely sterile again, it's going to be even a little more productive for a while there.
You know, I've been thinking about this thing, and I know this is not normally the platform we use for this type of talk, but there's going to be a couple of discussions, talks come to town about biochar. Have you heard about this?
No.
It's basically charcoal. And charcoal, you know, it is just exactly what you think, you know. But it in the soil, it has, you know, a huge amount of surface area, and it's a real good way to build up soil, and charcoal is a natural product of these fires. So what I think has happened is this is kind of Mother Nature's, you know, Band-Aid, this fix for these things that happen. In a normal fire, you would have more charcoal. Kind of what we see here in our last fire cycle was some more intense heat.
Right.
That if we didn't suppress quite so frequently, you know, you wouldn't have these places where it is so hot that it's really sterile.
Yeah.
I mean, that soil is right down to
like moon dust,
mineral, and nothing left. Yeah. But in the more frequent fire cycle, less intense heat, there would be more charcoal.
And probably a layering of it with loam.
And like you said, it has brought an enrichment to the streams. It does the same to the soil.
Yeah, absolutely.
So anyway, a little sidebar there. But now one other thing you mentioned, tell people what a trifecta is when you're fishing.
Yeah. That brings up Lloyd and his wonderful wife Colleen. That was a trip I had yesterday. It was just it was a really just a great day. It was Lloyd's birthday. He hadn't caught a fish on the or a steelhead on the fly. He'd caught him on gear before, and man, he started right in the morning, just within the first mile with a really nice bull trout, and then. What next came his first steelhead, which was a keeper, and that was a great fish, first one on the fly for him, and things were just going great. We were having the day was beautiful, and we pulled down to that stretch just above Leecher Creek, right above the alluvial fan blowout, and we started working this section that has been really good to me and a couple of my my friends out there as well, and we were dragging through, and just like where it was exactly where CP got his first fish we were just speaking of. And I said, you know, you make it across that rock and it's gonna bump a little, don't jerk it, let it get across there, once it calms down it's gonna go down, and sure enough, boom, it went down, and so it was a cutthroat. So that was trifecta number one, but I kind of blew it because I told him to rush it a little more. It was a small fish. We had plenty of tippet strength for it. Let's just get it in the net and get it back out of there. And so that one got away right at the net. My fault. That would have been one trifecta. But then right after that, we pulled right back out to the same exact spot, did it again, got another large bull trout, got that the fish back into the water. Went back to the spot after we rode back and forth across the river to land these fish. Went back across the river to the same spot and got a giant cutthroat. Just a huge, probably 22, 23-inch cutthroat.
Oh, my goodness.
Trophy, you know, if you could keep it, you'd break the state record with that, that fish right there. But
he must have been stoked.
Oh, he was very stoked because it was the biggest cutthroat that he'd ever caught by far, too.
Yeah.
And so then we missed one more fish, rode across the river, missed one more fish there, and... I don't think we really had any hits until we were just above Carlton. There's been a really sweet hole there, too, that just looks like nothing. And I told him that. It looks really weird. It's going to take you a few to get this drift. He got the drift down after a while, and they like to hit just right underneath your feet, right underneath the boat. And there's no other place you can sit to do it. Sure enough, just hammered it. And it was a big old wild female, two salt, and she gave him five jumps. And,
Wow.
We got her into the net, got her back into the river, and that was a solid trifecta right there. So he had almost two trifectas in one day. And I mean,
I think you got to count that. I mean, it was.
I know. It was my fault.
It was the guide's.
It was guide error. He would have landed it, taking his time like he was. And, you know, I mean, I don't know if I've even got a cutthroat this winter. Maybe one or two.
Have you had.
He got two in 15 minutes.
Have you had a double trifecta? I'm talking about your whole lifetime.
In one day, I don't know that I have.
Wow,
During steelhead season, just because getting those trout to bite during the winter.
Yeah, I know.
Just doesn't happen. So I think it was really, it was his birthday. Maybe the sun, the moon, the stars were all aligned for him. But hey, Lloyd, way to, what you were saying, way to prick him. Way to prick him, buddy.
Way to go, Lloyd. Happy birthday, by the way. So how does a person go about contacting you to get a tour down the river?
Well, just go to flyfishersproshop.com and Met Out Fishing Adventures. We're always keeping our blog up to date and ready to book some trips for you. So you can reach us there. Just give me a call at 509-429-7298. And hey, there's a lot of great fishing left in this month, but season's going to close at the end of March. So don't wait on it, because it's time to get your fish on. Fishing too. Bet your life, your sweet wife gon' catch more fish than you. Little fish bites, if you got good bait. Here's a little tip that I would like to relate. With my pole and my light, I'm gon' fishin'. The mama gon' fishin' and the baby gon' fishin' too.